Chapter 32. After a busy 2 days in the salon, Nia was reluctant to go out on the Wednesday evening, but she'd promised herself she would go again to the bungalow, try and check what exactly was going on there. She left the house about 6:30 and drove over to Cowes, where she parked where Richie had before. At least it was dry this evening, and she arrived at the bungalow quickly on foot, immediately spotting Richie's car. He was here. She had to decide now if she was going to call at the house or go home. She'd made up an excuse, but it seemed even weaker now she was here. This one was no better than those at the hotel and the nursing home, but it was the best she could do. Nia walked over to the bungalow. A man with his little Westie was on the other side of the road, and Nia felt sure she was being watched. She smiled over, hoping the man would walk on, but he hung about, and Nia had a nasty feeling he was in some kind of neighbourhood watch. Without thinking too much, she marched to the front door and rang the bell. Her heart was thumping. She could feel the man behind her watching still. There was no getting away. Richie came to the door and had no time to hide the look of horror on seeing her. "Is this Jade's place?" she asked, desperately, trying to steady her voice.
"No."
The word was barely more than a whisper. "Oh, no. Isn't this 13 Haven Way?"
"No, it's Haven Place."
"Oh, God, I'm so sorry. I was only going to post some things for her." She looked past him, trying to find a way to invite herself in. "So you have somewhere over here as well?" Richie seemed to have calmed down and to be assessing her.
"Maybe you'd better come in, that is, if you have time."
He gave a knowing look, and Nia knew he had sussed out what she was doing. "Of course. Thank you." Nia followed him inside. It was clear the bungalow had not been decorated for years, with faded flowered wallpaper and carpets. In the hallway stood an ugly wooden coat stand with Richie's coat, umbrella and bags. Nia was distracted by a large ornate mirror and glanced at her reflection. Her hair was a mess. She tried to push it back into style with her fingertips. Richie took Nia into the lounge, which had an old-fashioned suite and coffee table. There were no paintings or pictures anywhere. She sat on the edge of a grubby sofa, but Richie remained standing.
"So, now you'd better tell me what is really going on."
Richie's voice was firm now, and Nia suddenly felt very vulnerable and alone. "Look, I didn't come over here to visit a friend. I followed you here." He sat down, waiting. "Remember, you and Ruby gave me a lift over here the Wednesday before she died. Ruby saw you didn't come on the red jet with me, and she followed you. She told me about it in the garden at the party on the Sunday. She was distraught." Richie leant forward.
"What exactly did she say to you? Please, I need to know."
"All she told me was that she saw you come here. I assumed she thought you were seeing someone else. She talked about betrayal." Richie shook his head.
"No, she knew I wouldn't see someone else. I explained to her exactly what was going on."
He gave Nia a sideways look.
"I guess you'd like to know."
He waved a hand around the room.
"This place, this horrible old bungalow, is my retreat. I was desperate for a place of my own where I could create, be myself, and this was all I could afford. The old woman who lived here was going into a home. Her son is renting it to me. They cleared it out completely, apart from large items of furniture, curtains, carpets and kitchen appliances."
"You come here to create?"
"Yes, wait till I show you upstairs. I think you'll understand why I can work here."
"But why keep it a secret from Ruby?"
"I guess I didn't want her or Dad to feel I was ungrateful.
I am so lucky with that gallery. Most artists would sell their soul for that opportunity, and I do appreciate it. But over there, I have to paint the kind of things that my father and Ruby approve of. I come here to be free." His voice broke, and now he looked young and vulnerable.
I would have thought Ruby would have understood that. She was such an empathetic person. Her work on the helpline was about listening to people's problems.
Richie stood up and looked out of the window at the darkening skies.
I know, and that was a lovely side to Ruby, but she'd been brought up in a very controlled, black-and-white world. Right and wrong were obvious, no blurred edges. Creativity can feel dangerous to people like Ruby and my father. They just about cope with the work I do over in the gallery. It's safe, conventional. They didn't understand it's all so suffocating.
I'd not thought about that side of Ruby. She was so sympathetic when I told her about my problems.
Yes, but don't let that fool you into thinking she was easygoing. You couldn't even say she had a strong moral compass. At least on a compass, the needle moves. No, for Ruby, there was only right or wrong.
I was surprised when Ethan told me that she gave away the money her mother left her because it had been associated with gambling. It seemed pretty extreme.
She saw Richie clench his fist.
It does to us, but to her it was perfectly logical. My father approved of her decision, and I wasn't surprised when she told me she had to give it all away. Gambling is wrong, therefore the money was tainted, was the way she saw it. Black and white, right and wrong, love and hate, nothing in between.
And so you found this place to work?
Exactly. I was able to scrape together the rent without Ruby knowing by not putting some of the sales through the books. It was worth the risk, and then, of course, there was that night on the red jet when she realised I wasn't going to the mainland and followed me.
And she came in? Saw your painting?
No, she didn't. She stood on the doorstep and got very upset. All she could see was that I'd lied about where I'd been going. Lying is wrong. I lied to her. I lied by telling her I was going to the mainland when I was coming here. I lied when I hid a tiny amount of money to pay my rent. There was no coming back from that.
But couldn't she forgive you?
We spoke again on the Sunday she died, and she did offer to forgive me on one condition.
A condition?
Oh, yes. Love and forgiveness were always conditional in the world we grew up in. They had to be earned.
And what did Ruby ask you to do?
She wanted me to give up the bungalow and confess to my father what I had done. I was heartbroken at the thought of leaving this place and I refused. I don't know why, but I'd imagined that we could find some kind of compromise. I guess it reflects how desperate I was. I was denying in my head everything I knew about Ruby. I should have known compromise wasn't in her vocabulary, and I should have realised how seriously she took it all. I'd have given up this place in a heartbeat if I'd known what she would go on to do that night.
You told the police your marriage was in a good place, Nia said gently.
I know, another lie, as Ruby would say. I said it when they first told me about Ruby because I knew there had been a time when we had loved each other and, given time, we'd have sorted things out.
Richie looked around the room. Let's get out of this room. It's so depressing.
Maybe if you see the reason I come here, you might understand.
Come.
It was a command. Without thinking, Nia stood up and followed Richie out of the living room. He took her upstairs and to what must have been a bedroom but was completely cleared of furniture now. There were piles of blank canvases, paints and a large covered easel close to a long window. Even with the light fading, Nia could tell that in the daytime it would be flooded with light.
It's perfect, isn't it?
He spoke in awe, a child gazing at the lights on the Christmas tree. As Nia walked around the room, she was greeted by the same smells as she experienced in Richie's gallery. The oils combined with the hairs of the brushes, the solvent to clean them, the canvases. Richie seemed to relax, be at home as soon as they entered the room. It could have been a million miles away from the stuffy old room downstairs. Nia wandered around. On the easel, a painting was covered up. She lifted the cloth and saw part of an oil painting of a rather frightening old man whose eyes seemed to glint threateningly at her. She quickly covered him up and then saw two more finished paintings resting against the wall alongside some old frames. These were quite different from the portrait and from each other. They both involved the sea, but nothing like the seascapes back at the gallery. One was of a woman standing at the water's edge, the light flooding her face and white dress. The other was an abstract of the sea, using thick layers of blue and white paint, the changing forms of the sea and clouds captured beautifully. "They are wonderful," she said. "They're very different from each other."
"Thank you. I've been experimenting, trying out different styles," said Richie, and she could see the excitement and passion in his eyes.
"If it's so frustrating back at the gallery, wouldn't it be best to break free? You're an adult. You don't belong to the righteous anymore. You don't need to stay tied to your father."
"I need the gallery. It's somewhere I can make a name for myself, but I don't have the money to pay the rent. It's as basic as that, and so, yes, I need my father."
He paused. They went back downstairs, and Nia headed to the front door. "Thank you for explaining," she said.
"Don't tell anyone, will you? I don't want anyone else coming over here."
"I won't," she said.
"Hang on. I'll leave with you. I have a wretched seascape to finish over at the studio. This is a commission, though, and pays well."
Richie grabbed his coat and they left together. He locked the door and then put the key into a pretend rock key safe close to the door and grinned at her.
"I know, not such a good idea, but I am terrible at losing or forgetting keys. It's pretty safe around here. You might have seen the old man over the road with his dog. He doesn't miss much."
Richie walked in one direction towards his car, near the other to the car park. As she drove back, she thought about what she'd seen. So all this time, Richie had been renting that rather grim little bungalow. However much Richie explained Ruby's reaction, Nia couldn't help feeling she'd overreacted, calling what he'd done a betrayal. It seemed so extreme. Maybe it was a side of Ruby she simply didn't understand. Richie sounded, though, as if he'd have been prepared to give it all up for her. Nia didn't see how he could have had any more reason for wanting Ruby out of the way. Of course, her rationale for assuming Richie was the father of Jade's baby had been the address, and that had now been shattered. No, she didn't see any reason to think that anymore. It did leave open the question as to who the father was. There were three other men in the close: Joe, Ethan, and Ian. Jade had been adamant it wasn't Joe, which left Ethan or Ian. Jade had been very protective of Ethan, and yet at the same time, Nia had witnessed the flirtation between Ian and Jade. And there had been those barbed remarks by Lucy. Did she realise her husband might have fathered a child with Jade? That would mean not only that he'd had an affair, but also that he was fulfilling a long-held dream of hers with someone else. It was pretty clear Jade was keeping things secret, but of course, Ruby had known. Was this at the root of Lucy's problems with Ruby? Was she scared Ruby would expose what Ian and Jade were content to keep secret? It had to be possible. When Nia returned home, after greeting Romeo, she went straight upstairs. After the events of the evening, it wasn't surprising Richie was the person uppermost in her mind. It would be interesting to meet his father at the funeral, and also to get a taste of this religion that had been such a strong influence on not only Richie, but Ruby and Jade as well. The other thing that struck her, looking at her notes, was how the list of questions against Ian's name was growing. The thing with Ian, she realised, was that his reputation meant a huge amount to him. He was a man who needed to be liked, needed recognition. The way he was reacting to possibly losing his TV slot showed this. Someone like that might go a long way to hide secrets, and Ruby had possibly known more than most. Nia put the list away and took Romeo out for his late evening walk. The town was quiet and the air cool. She walked along the pier, down on the beach. The crowds had been and gone, and yet down here it remained constant. The sea saw everything that happened. It never forgot.
Nia remembered Safi showing her something she'd learned in biology about the rings you saw in the trunk of a tree when it had been cut down. Safi said the gaps between each ring told you about the climate in that year. To think that a tree that was hundreds of years old held a memory of the weather from centuries ago. It was incredible. Down here on the beach, of course, there were fossils holding memories of thousands of years before. And the sea out there? Well, it had seen what happened here the night Ruby died. On Friday, it would be Ruby's funeral, traditionally a time to remember someone's life. All the close would be there, each with their own memories of Ruby. But one person there would have the last memory of her. One person sat down here, watching Ruby take her last breath.